Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 323 about the Unabomber. This is being recorded on August 26th of the year 2001. A number of years ago, the Unabomber captivated headlines when there was a search for someone called the Unabomber, and finally Theodore Kaczynski was convicted and admitted to having mailed a bunch of bombs to a number of different people engaged in scientific and medical research over the years. Those bombs resulted in fatalities and serious injuries, and I do not in any way doubt that Theodore Kaczynski was the Unabomber. I also wonder whether perhaps he received assistance from party or parties unknown. There were some accounts of his possibly being linked to right-wing groups. And as we have been examining in the course of this program, while at Harvard, whatever the possible impact on his later behavior, while at Harvard, Theodore Kaczynski volunteered as an undergraduate and participated in a brutalizing psychological experiment that was conducted under the supervision of Henry A. Murray. Henry A. Murray was a leading social scientist at Harvard, and for our purposes, perhaps more interestingly, during World War II, Henry Murray worked for the OSS, America's World War II Intelligence Service, and the precursor of the CIA. In that regard, he was involved in developing psychological testing procedures for the OSS. He was very interested in brainwashing and may very well have continued his connections with the intelligence community and the national security establishment in the post-war period. In For the Record programs 78 and 93, two interviews with Christopher Simpson about his very important work, The Science of Coercion, Psychological Warfare and Mass Communication Research, 1945 to 1960, we took a look at the profound role that the national security establishment played in generating funding for research in the social sciences in the Cold War period. It would be difficult to exaggerate the involvement of the national security establishment in research into the social sciences in that period. And again, both For the Record 78 and 93 are available from Spitfire. Time permitting, I'll tell you more about that later in the program. What we're going to examine in this program, in this half of the broadcast, is the extent to which this psychological experiment that Kaczynski participated in and which may have been conducted on behalf of elements of the intelligence community and or national security establishment, the extent to which this experiment helped to unbalance the shy but relatively well-adjusted Kaczynski, and we're also, time permitting, going to examine the extent to which Kaczynski's dilemma, so to speak, embraces a very important element of mainstream intellectual discourse. In that regard, we're going to take a look at the extent to which Kaczynski's pathological and criminal response to that very important element of mainstream intellectual discourse could perhaps be said to be defining a response paradigm to that, which is not only pathological and counterproductive, but which could serve as a marvelous pretext for suppressing all debate, perhaps violently so, on the subject. And again, I think, as I said in the first half of the broadcast, whatever the role of the experiment that Kaczynski was subjected to at Harvard on his subsequent behavior, and it's very important to note that in that context that the experimenter, Henry Murray, and the milieu to which Murray was connected are inextricably linked with the development of mind control by elements of the military and the intelligence community. This is not to say necessarily that Kaczynski was formally subjected to mind control. There is no evidence in that regard, but that's certainly a possibility that has to be considered. But perhaps the most disturbing aspect of Kaczynski is the extent to which his behavior, perhaps as a result of manipulation, is being held up, at least in certain circles, as something of a role model for future expression on, again, what are very important elements of mainstream intellectual debate, sort of the pathologization, so to speak, of activism and political discourse. Again, time permitting, we'll get into that a little later. Research credit on the article that has comprised the vast bulk of this broadcast goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the Atlantic Monthly's issue of June of 2000. You can obtain this from the Atlantic Monthly's website at www.theatlantic.com/issues. This article is called Harvard and the Making of the Unabomber. It's by Alston Chase, and I'm going to reread the preface by way of continuity for those stations that only have a half hour slot for these programs. In the fall of 1958, Theodore Kaczynski, a brilliant but vulnerable boy of 16, entered Harvard College. There he encountered a prevailing intellectual atmosphere of anti-technological despair. There also, he was deceived into subjecting himself to a series of purposely brutalizing psychological experiments that may have confirmed his still-forming belief in the evil of science. Was the Unabomber born at Harvard? A look inside the files. And again, this particular experiment on what Henry Murray called the dyad, spelled D-Y-A-D, which is was viewed by Murray as the basic unit of social interaction, a one-on-one social transaction. The dyad was the focal point of Murray's research, and he developed this term, at least for the purposes here. And as noted in the first half of the broadcast, there are very strong similarities between the methodology that the people who were experimented on were subjected to, including Theodore Kaczynski, and the methodology that Henry Murray used in developing his psychological screening procedures for OSS officer candidates. The difference, as Alston Chase notes, is that the students did not know they were going to be basically given the third degree, and this appears to have had a very destructive effect on some of them, including Theodore Kaczynski. After discussing the extensive psychological testing that was conducted on the experiment on the subjects in this experiment for the purposes of developing as complete a psychological profile of them as possible, Alston Chase goes on to write as follows about the Henry A. Murray experiment to which Theodore Kaczynski was subjected when he was an undergraduate. Only after most of this data had been collected did researchers administer the stressful dyadic confrontation. During the year following this session, each student was called back for several recall interviews and sometimes was asked to comment on the movie of himself being reduced to impotent anger by the interrogator. During these replays, Murray wrote, quote, "You will see yourself making numerous grimaces and gestures," unquote, and, quote, "uttering incongruent, disjunctive, and unfinished sentences," unquote. During the last year of the experiment, Murray made the students available to his graduate student assistants to serve as guinea pigs for their own research projects. By graduation, as Kenneth Keniston, one of these researchers, summarized the process later, quote, "Each student had spent approximately 200 hours in the research and had provided hundreds of pages of information about himself, his beliefs, his past life, his family, his college life and development, his fantasies, his hopes, and his dreams." And I'm going to review a passage from this article that I read in the first part of the broadcast by way of establishing continuity for those people that are listening to this on stations that only air a half hour at a time. And this is central to the discussion that's about to follow because this concerns Henry A. Murray's background in the intelligence community and his interest in psychological testing. I would also note that, as we're going to examine here, Henry A. Murray was very interested in some of the experimentation that was going on at Harvard with hallucinogenic drugs, and in RFA 28, we took a look at the profound role of the intelligence community and the national security establishment in LSD experimentation and also examined the profound role that elements of the national security establishment of the intelligence community played in the actual dissemination of hallucinogens and perhaps even in the creation, to a certain extent anyway, of the psychedelic subculture, so to speak, of the 1960s and early 70s. Of Henry A. Murray's background in the OSS, the World War II Intelligence Service and precursor of the CIA, Alston Chase writes, speaking of Murray, he lent his talents to national aims during World War II. Forrest Robinson, the author of a 1992 biography of Murray, wrote that during this period, he, quote, flourished as a leader in the global crusade of good against evil, unquote. He was also an advocate of world government. Murray saw understanding the dyad, it seems, as a practical tool in the service of the Great Crusade in both its hot and cold phases. He had long shown interest, for example, in the whole subject of brainwashing. During the war, Murray served in the Office of Strategic Services, the forerunner of the CIA, helping to develop psychological screening tests for applicants and, according to Timothy Leary, monitoring military experiments on brainwashing. In his book, The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, John Marks reported that General Wild Bill Donovan, the OSS director, quote, called in Harvard psychology professor Henry Harry Murray to devise a system for testing the suitability of applicants to the OSS. Murray and his colleagues put together an assessment system that tested a recruit's ability to stand up under pressure, to be a leader, to hold liquor, to lie skillfully, and to read a person's character by the nature of his clothing. Murray's system became a fixture in the OSS. And as noted in the first part of the program, the fact that there is no direct evidence that Kaczynski was subjected to mind control in the usual use of the term, namely hypnosis, the administration of psychoactive drugs, psychosurgery, electromagnetic radiation, or ultrasonics, does not mean that he was not subjected to such control. That's certainly a possibility that I think needs to be researched. Certainly the milieu that was experimenting on Theodore Kaczynski was the milieu inextricably linked with research into mind control, and so I think that is an element of what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. Of the experiment to which Kaczynski was subjected and its similarity to the OSS experiments or the OSS screening procedures devised by Murray, and the distinct possibility that the intelligence community may have been behind the Murray experiment, either directly or indirectly, Alston Chase writes as follows, speaking of the experiment. At other times, he recalled the idealistic goal of acquiring knowledge that would lead to improving human personality development. He is Henry A. Murray. At still other times, his language seemed to suggest a continued interest in stressful interrogations. For example, Murray explained in his Notes on Dyadic Research, unquote, dated March 16, 1959, that an ongoing goal of the research, which focused heavily on degree of anxiety and disintegration, unquote, was to, quote, design and evaluate instruments and procedures for the prediction of how each subject will react in the course of a stressful dyadic proceeding, unquote. Sometimes Murray suggested that his research might have no value at all. Cui bono, he once asked, again quoting, as the data stand, they are nothing but raw data, meaningless as such, and the question is what meaning, what intellectual news can be extracted from them, unquote. In another context, he asked, quote, are the costs in man-hours incurred by our elaborate, multiple procedures far greater than any possible gains in knowledge, unquote? Such equivocation prompts one to ask, could the experiment have had a purpose that Murray was reluctant to divulge? Was the multi-form assessments project intended at least in part to help the CIA determine how to test or break down an individual's ability to withstand interrogation? The writer Alexander Coburn has asked whether the students might have been given the hallucinogenic drug LSD without their knowledge, possibly at the request of the CIA. By the late 1950s, according to some, Murray had become quite interested in hallucinogenics, including LSD and psilocybin. And soon after Murray's experiments on Kaczynski and his classmates were underway in 1960, Timothy Leary returned to Harvard and, with Murray's blessing, began his experiments with psilocybin. By the way, in the aforementioned RFA 28, we took a look at the profound role of elements of the CIA with Timothy Leary, not only with his experiments, but with his subsequent role as the guru of hallucinogens. Continuing. In his autobiography Flashbacks, 1983, Leary, who would dedicate the rest of his life to promoting hallucinogenic drugs, described Murray as, quote, the wizard of personality assessment who, as OSS chief psychologist, had monitored military experiments on brainwashing and sodium amytal interrogation. Murray expressed great interest in our drug research project and offered his support, unquote. Forrest Robinson reports in his biography that Murray took psilocybin and, in 1961, delivered a talk on his experience to the International Congress of Applied Psychology. That Leary had Murray's support was confirmed by Martin A. Lee and Bruce Schlein in their book Acid Dreams, The Complete Social History of LSD, 1985. Quote, Leary returned to Harvard and established a psilocybin research project with the approval of Dr. Harry Murray, chairman of the Department of Social Relations. Dr. Murray, who ran the personality assessment section of the OSS during World War II, took a keen interest in Leary's work. He volunteered for a psilocybin session, becoming one of the first of many faculty and graduate students to sample the mushroom pill under Leary's guidance, unquote. And then Alston Chase goes on to write, Kaczynski thinks he was never given LSD. And after exhaustive research, I could find no evidence that LSD was ever used in Murray's research. Nevertheless, whether the research had a defense connection of some sort remains an open question. Although direct evidence of support from a federal defense grant is so far lacking, circumstantial evidence exists. The strong similarity between the OSS stress tests and the later experiments, Murray's association with the OSS, his grant proposal to do research for the Navy Department, and the lack of any clearly explained purpose for the study. Obviously, the dyadic studies would have had considerable utility for the defense establishment, either as a framework for testing recruits or as continuing work on how to improve interrogation techniques. And skipping down, it would appear that these tests and the experiment to which Kaczynski was subjected had a profoundly destabilizing effect on his personality. Chase writes, "There is no evidence of immediate mental degradation in the project's aftermath. Emotional turmoil is another matter. As Sally Johnson, the forensic psychiatrist, reported, Kaczynski clearly began to experience emotional distress then, and began to develop his anti-technology views." And skipping down again, "When, soon after, Kaczynski began to worry about the possibility of mind control, he was not giving vent to paranoid delusions. In view of Murray's experiment, he was not only rational, but right. The university and the psychiatric establishment had been willing accomplices in an experiment that had treated human beings as unwitting guinea pigs and had treated them brutally." Here is a powerful logical foundation for Kaczynski's latterly expressed conviction that academics, in particular scientists, were thoroughly compromised servants of, quote, the system, unquote, employed in the development of techniques for the behavioral control of populations. And what we're going to consider next is the extent to which Kaczynski's views not only stemmed from, but to a certain extent embraced an altogether mainstream and very important intellectual discourse concerning the role of technology in society and also the alienation that industrial society has produced. I would note here that Oswald Spengler, who wrote The Decline of the West, was one of the major intellectual influences on Francis Parker Yockey and his Imperium book. Francis Parker Yockey is a little recognized but vitally important or extremely important figure in international fascism and the focal point of the encyclopedic work Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International by Kevin Coogan. The program referred to here is the general education program at Harvard to which Theodore Kaczynski was subjected, and as noted here by Alston Chase, the Gen Ed program embraces many of the elements of debate that Theodore Kaczynski responded to in a criminal and pathological fashion. In German R, Intermediate German with Review of Fundamentals, which both Kaczynski and I took, we encountered a whole corpus of pessimistic writers from Friedrich Nietzsche, God is dead, morality is the herd instinct of the individual, the thought of suicide is a great source of comfort, to Oswald Spengler, this machine technics will end with a Faustian civilization and one day will lie in fragments, forgotten, our railways and steamships as dead as the Roman roads in the Chinese wall, our giant cities and skyscrapers in ruins like old Memphis and Babylon, unquote. In several courses, we studied Joseph Conrad, who would later become one of Kaczynski's favorite writers, and whose description of the villain in Heart of Darkness could have been applied to Kaczynski himself. Quote, all Europe contributed to the making of Kurtz. He was, quote, a gifted creature. He was a universal genius, unquote. Conrad's The Secret Agent, a satire about bomb-wielding anarchists who declare war on science, and whose intentional irony Kaczynski may have missed, presages the Unabomber Manifesto. Science, one of the plotters suggests, is the sacrosanct fetish, unquote. Skipping down. Certainly the intellectual climate generated by Gen Ed informed Kaczynski's developing views. The Unabomber philosophy bears a striking resemblance to many parts of Harvard's Gen Ed syllabus. Its anti-technology message and its despairing depiction of the sinister forces that lie beneath the surface of civilization, its emphasis on the alienation of the individual and on the threat that science poses to human values, all these were in the readings. And these kinds of ideas did not affect Kaczynski alone. They reached an entire generation and beyond. Gen Ed had more than an intellectual impact. According to a study of Harvard and Radcliffe undergraduates that included Kaczynski's class of 1962, conducted by William G. Perry, Jr., the director of the university's Bureau of Study Council, the undergraduate curriculum had a profound impact on the emotions, the attitudes, and even the health of some students. According to Perry, intellectual development for Harvard and Radcliffe undergraduates typically encompassed a progression from a simplistic, dualistic view of reality to an increasingly relativistic and contingent one. Entering freshmen tend to favor simple over complex solutions and to divide the world into truth and falsehood, good and bad, friend and foe. Yet in most of their college courses, especially in the social sciences and the humanities, they are taught that truth is relative. Most accept this, but a number cannot. They react against relativism by clinging more fiercely to an absolute view of the world. To some of these students, in Perry's words, science and mathematics still seem to offer hope, unquote. Nevertheless, Perry wrote, regression into dualism, unquote, is not a happy development, for it calls for an enemy. Dualists in a relativistic environment tend to see themselves as surrounded. They become increasingly lonely and alienated, and this attitude requires an equally absolutist rejection of any establishment and, quote, can call forth in its defense hate, projection, and denial of all distinctions but one, Perry wrote. The tendency is toward paranoia, unquote. As evident in his writings, Kaczynski rejected the complexity and relativism he found in the humanities and social sciences. He embraced both the dualistic cognitive style of mathematics and general education's anti-technology message. And, perhaps most important, he absorbed the message of positivism, which demanded value-neutral reasoning, and preached that, as Kaczynski would later express it in his journal, quote, there was no logical justification for morality, unquote. And next, Alston Chase goes on to describe the extent to which Kaczynski has, unfortunately, perhaps like Timothy McVeigh for some deluded individuals, such as Gore Vidal, Kaczynski has become something of a role model, and beyond that, his behavior, perhaps something of a paradigm for activism, and that is most unfortunate indeed. Kaczynski has attracted a large new following of admirers. Indeed, he has become an inspiration and a sort of leader in exile for the burgeoning green anarchist movement. In a letter to me, Kaczynski made clear that he keeps in contact with other anarchists, including John Zerzan, Zerzan, the intellectual leader of a circle of anarchists in Eugene, Oregon, who was among the few people to visit Kaczynski while he was in jail in Sacramento awaiting trial. According to the Boston Globe, Teresa Kintz, one of Zerzan's fellow anarchists, was the first writer to whom Kaczynski granted an interview after his arrest. Writing for the London-based Green Anarchist, Kintz quoted Kaczynski as saying, quote, for those who realize the need to do away with the techno-industrial system, if you work for its collapse, in effect, you are killing a lot of people, unquote. The Los Angeles Times has reported that last June, 200 of Zerzan's comrades rioted in Eugene, smashing computers, breaking shop windows, throwing bricks at cars, and injuring 8 police officers. According to the Seattle Times, followers of Zerzan's also arrived in force at last December's Battle of Seattle at the World Trade Organization meeting, where they smashed shop windows, flattened tires, and dumped garbage cans on the street. Kaczynski continues to comment approvingly on the violent exploits of environmental radicals. In a letter he wrote last year to the Denver television reporter Rick Salinger, he expressed his support for the Earth Liberation Front's arsons at the Vail Ski Resort, fires that destroyed more than $12 million worth of property. I fully approve of the arson, he wrote Salinger, and I congratulate the people who carried it out, unquote. Kaczynski went on to commend an editorial in the Earth First Journal by Kintz, who wrote, quote, the Earth Liberation Front's eco-sabotage of Vail constituted a political act of conscience perfectly in keeping with the sincere expression of the biocentric paradigm many Earth Firsters espouse, unquote. And skipping down again, the Portland Oregonian found that during the last 4 years alone, the West has been rocked by 33 substantial incidents with damages reaching $28.8 million. And some seem clearly inspired by Edward Abbey's 1975 novel, The Monkey Wrench Gang. They have escalated dangerously, sometimes with the use of bombs in the last 6 years. And again, the use by some of these people of Kaczynski as a role model is most unfortunate indeed, and indeed could be viewed as perhaps the pathologization of activism. Continuing. Some, including me, this is Chase writing, believe that if Kaczynski does win a new trial, he will argue that his killings were necessary in order to save the world from a great evil, namely technology. Most legal experts believe that this would be an unpersuasive and even suicidal defense strategy, leading directly to a guilty verdict and a sentence of death. But apparently Kaczynski would rather die a martyr for his ideas than live out his life in prison. At any rate, his essential point is correct. The Unabomber is not only a killer, but a sane one. He is a terrorist like Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, and Ramzi Ahmed Youssef, the World Trade Center bomber. And, like them, he is evil. But what kind of evil? The real story of Ted Kaczynski is one of the nature of modern evil. Evil that results from the corrosive powers of intellect itself and its arrogant tendency to put ideas above common humanity. It stems from our capacity to conceive theories or philosophies that promote violence or murder in order to avert supposed injustices or catastrophes, to acquiesce in historical necessity, or to find the final solution to the world's problems, and, by this process of abstraction, to dehumanize our enemies. We become like Raskolnikov in Crime and Punishment, who declares, "I did not kill a human being, but a principle," unquote. Guided by theories, philosophies, and ideologies, the worst mass killers in modern history transformed their victims into depersonalized abstractions, making them easier to kill. Much the way Stalin, citing communist dogma, ordered the murder of millions of peasants toward, quote, the elimination of the kulaks as a class, unquote, so Kaczynski rationalized his murders as necessary to, quote, solve the technology problem, unquote. And skipping down again, no one other than Kaczynski's three victims has yet been murdered by a fanatical environmentalist, but investigators consider it merely a matter of time before someone else is killed for similar reasons. Quote, "I think we've come very close to that line," one federal agent told the Oregonian, "and we will cross that line unless we deal with this problem," unquote. We may cross the line sooner than we think. In a September 1998 letter to me, Kaczynski wrote, quote, "I suspect that you underestimate the strength and depth of feeling against industrial civilization that has been developing in recent years. I've been surprised at some of the things that people have written to me. It looks to me as if our society is moving into a pre-revolutionary situation. By that, I don't mean a situation in which revolution is inevitable, but one in which it is a realistic possibility. The majority of people are pessimistic or cynical about existing institutions. There is widespread alienation and directionlessness among young people. Perhaps all that is needed is to give these forces appropriate organization and direction." Seen from that perspective, it might seem that the rest of society is only a few steps behind Kaczynski. When Henry Murray spoke of the need to create a new world man, unquote, this is not what he had in mind. Again, very similar to some of the dialogue, some of the verbiage that Gore Vidal has used to describe Timothy McVeigh. I've alluded to other programs available from Spitfire. You can reach Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Their website is www.spitfirelist.com, and it's equipped with real audio. And sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. There's a longer URL with For the Record programs available for download only on Real Audio. This concludes For the Record program number 323, being recorded on August 26th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.